because men are naturally protective of women. And it's funny, you know, I've always talked about this. Men didn't have a secret meeting behind women's backs. And like, we're going to beat the hell out of them. By the way, we're going to set this unrealistic standard of beauty. I don't even like boobs and butts. It'll mess with their head. So glad to have this next guest. I see that on every one of these guest segments. But honestly, this is where I geek out. This is actually the one guest for whom we've had Academy Award winning actors. We've had war heroes, all of whom I have great respect. But really was looking forward to getting this woman, lady. She'll clarify with her pronouns. You can follow her on YouTube. Girl Writes What? Just Google that. Karen Strawn, thanks so much for being on.
Oh, no, thank you for inviting me. And please don't ever refer to me as a lady again.
Okay, so woman?
Yes, definitely a woman. A little bit of a weirdo. And other than that, and my preferred pronouns are whatever people want to call me.
Okay.
So
no, broad is a middle ground.
Broad?
Broad, dame. These are...
Dame. I don't know. I kind of like broad. My mother-in-law, my ex-mother-in-law used to call me a tough bird.
Tough old bird.
Yeah.
That's a good one. You know, broad is kind of complimentary when you think about it because it typically means one is bosomy, and that was something that men were attracted to. So, okay, for people who aren't familiar with you yet, Karen, and they should be, Girl Writes What? That's what you type in.
Yeah.
Tell them how your kind of big claim to fame. So some people would say men's rights activist. I just sort of see you as a truth teller in the third wave feminist community. I don't want to misrepresent you. You introduce yourself to the world.
Well, I mean, like, people ask me what I identify as, and, like, primarily, first and foremost, it's anti-feminist, and secondary to that is advocacy for the problems of men and boys and sort of a more balanced and positive understanding of masculinity currently and historically. Some people sort of call me a gender theorist. I kind of go into the evolutionary psychology of men and women and how all of that works. And it's kind of a mixed bag. I'm kind of like a little column A, a little column B, and yeah.
We'll refer to you as Z. You have not yet decided.
We call that Zed here.
Zed, that's true. Okay. Yeah, you know what? And I got kicked out of class, was raised in Canada, if you don't know, in Montreal. And the teacher, teacher corrected me and said Zed. I said no. And she said, yes, it's Zed. I said, okay, hold on a second. Let me run this through for you, Mrs. Mesher. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, and Zed. What's wrong with this picture? And I was kicked out and sent home with a note for being a smartass.
You know, you strike me as a person who probably got sent home a lot.
I did. And you know what's funny? That ties us right back. I got sent home, you know, for like sending love letters or getting caught kissing a girl in the playground, right? Nowadays, that's considered a violation.
Sexual assault, yes.
Sexual assault for kissing a girl in the playground, which is just crazy. I mean, that's how boys and girls kind of figure it out. You say they're gross, but you do it on a dare. So for people who don't necessarily know, I mean, they call you men's rights men's rights activist, I guess is a term. I think it's kind of a silly term. But you do point out, and people would expect you, you know, coming, they would expect you to be a feminist because you show up at a lot of these panels and you come across very intellectual and we'll get into that. But they expect you to be a feminist.
Short hair.
Short hair, boycotted. Yes. Okay.
No makeup.
I was going to say it, you know. And I was going to say it down the line, but I didn't want to turn you off right away.
Yeah, no. I totally project lesbianism all over the place. So, well,
that's,
you know,
just like Gay Jared. People assume and proposition him.
Yeah, even people I work with.
There you go.
All day long.
You know, honestly, I never got hit on by women, even when I was young and hot. I don't know why that is. I think maybe I just scare people a little.
Well, no, but I wouldn't say when you were young and hot. You're a pretty not lady, woman, broad. You're a cute bird, see? But yeah,
there you go.
No makeup, short hair. People would assume that. You really do point out some glaring inconsistencies in modern feminism. And you argue that actually men right now have it worse off, that women have a leg up. As far as sort of the cultural playing field right now. And people throw a fit and they get furious at you until they actually listen. What brought you to that, and why do you think people react in the way that they do?
I think that they react in the way that they do because there's the sort of the cultural or the acculturation, the sort of education that they've got where, you know, so they've been exposed since early childhood to this narrative that women were always oppressed and they didn't have equal rights and they don't get equal pay for equal work. And there's all of these memes going around
right.
that most of them are either outright false or questionable. Right.
Yeah.
Arguable. The debate is not done on the entire question of the historical oppression of women.
Right.
In my opinion. And these have all been presented to people as fact. And they've internalized all of those messages. And so they have this belief system. And that belief system is also reinforced by their innate psychology. Right. This is why I go into evolutionary psychology a lot, just how we perceive other individuals, how tribalism works, how sexism works, how all of those things work.
Right.
And so it's very, very easy for, you know, for feminists to convince an entire society, a society that has 7 different federal departments dedicated to women's health and well-being, none for men. That has affirmative action for women, that has done nothing but pander to women, women's interests, women's needs, spends way more money on women's health, despite the fact that men die earlier than women of 14 of the 15 leading causes of death, more focus on depression and mental illness in women, despite the fact that men are 3 to 4 times more likely to commit suicide and be addicted to drugs and all of these things, right?
Right.
That you can convince society that this society that focuses entirely on women's well-being to the detriment of even children, that this society is actually inherently misogynistic and always has been.
Right.
Right. And it's because there's a sort of a vulnerability in our psychology that makes that narrative.
Well, I think particularly for men, because men are naturally protective of women. And it's funny, you know, I've always talked about this. Men didn't have a secret meeting behind women's backs and like, we're going to beat the hell out of them. By the way, we're going to set this unrealistic standard of beauty. I don't even like boobs and butts. It'll mess with their head. Like, you know, there's no secret society. The truth is, any guy I get, you know, I hang around, maybe one is a rapist. But you'd think I'd know one who's like, I was raping this broad. And we, you know, if we're all rapists, that it would come up. It never comes up. Just kind of like, you know, you meet a genuine racist and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
That really caught me off guard. You just used
the
N-word and you weren't quoting Kanye. So I think men are inclined to believe it because men do see women as more helpless than themselves, as those in need of protecting. And so they're like, wow, God, I don't want to mistreat them. Yeah, we should give them that extra special precaution. Do you think that's deliberately preyed upon?
It is part of that. One of the problems with the feminist narrative over that, you know, it's misogynistic to consider women weak and consider them in need of extra protection and blah, 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 because women are just equally as strong and capable as men.
Yeah.
But that's not why men feel that way about women. Because, you know, ask any geeky, nerdy guy, right, what his experience was and has been, you know, being weak, being maybe unhealthy, being, you know, vulnerable, right? A vulnerable person, right?
Is that right, Gay Jared?
He
was almost died. He had his, can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Had his lower intestine removed. We'll get back to it. But true story, he was as weak as humanly possible, and his colostomy bag blew up on his significant other. Sorry, continue, Karen.
I don't know if I can follow.
It's a true story, Jared.
Anything that
true
I say
story.
From here on in is going to be completely uninteresting.
True story.
but no, essentially you have a completely different attitude toward men who are weak from men.
Yeah.
Than toward, like, they're getting their underpants pulled up over their heads and getting stuffed into lockers, right? Whereas the
true.
Fragile, weak, helpless women are being protected.
This is true.
By the majority of men, right? And there's that impulse there. And you find even, I hear feminists saying all the time, you know, like the reason why the suicide rate for men is so high is because we teach boys and girls that they're different and we teach boys that their feelings don't matter. And these are things that happen, you know, boys are encouraged to play further away from the parent. They're encouraged to be more independent.
Right.
They are they tend to fuss more, but parents wait longer before picking them up and comfort them for less time on average mm-hmm. than with girls, right?
That's probably true. I didn't even think about that.
Her problem is that she can't see why we treat boys that way. The reason why we treat boys that way is because we're preparing them for what's going to happen when they sprout a little shaggy here and get the little bump in their throat and their voice cracks, at which point even feminists are going to be like, oh, yeah, you whiny piss baby, I'm just going to drink your male tears, right? Nobody cares how they feel once they start actually sprouting some secondary.
But they're so gross. There's nothing more gross than like a 13-year-old sticky teenage boy with a laptop.
Well, agreed. Okay.
No one likes them. You don't get any free pass.
And you look at even just grown men, right? Look at somebody who wants to draw attention to the suicide rate in men. I can get away with it, but you know, when men actually do that, what tends to happen is someone will bring up that women attempt suicide more than men. That's another fact that isn't quite, you know, in evidence. I have never actually seen a piece of data.
Well, that would be horrible if that is true, because that would be proof that women are more inept at suicide.
Yeah, they're either incompetent or they don't really mean it.
Yeah. Well, we had a guy actually who jumped in Montreal from the Eaton Center. I knew kids who were friends with him. He jumped from the Eaton Center, which is four stories in Montreal. We have the second city in Montreal. You go downtown, subterranean, and they found him on a security camera for 3 days prior on his lunch break, walking back and forth on that walk before he actually threw himself over. Turned out he had some kind of debts that he wouldn't have been able to protect his family from. And he thought that was a better option to protect his family. And that really shocked me as a kid, going like, well, I mean, this is not a guy who was trying to. This was a guy who absolutely wanted out. And it's very, very different. And I think people need to take that into account when dealing with the stats.
They really do. But, you know, if you bring up male suicide as a man, you'll have people say, well, women attempt it more, and you're just trying to make men out to be the real victims of suicide, as if it's almost like they cannot think other than in zero-sum terms, right? When you say men are also victims of X, right? They assume that you're saying, oh, so you're saying men are the real victims of X.
Right.
And nobody else can be a victim of it.
That's important because I'm not in the men's rights camp where you get these people on YouTube who are like, actually, men, I don't want any special concessions made for men. I think I'm totally fine with acknowledging that we're different. Some advantages women will have, some advantages men will have, and we're fine with it. And they've been largely unwritten but agreed upon since the beginning of time, and I'm okay with it.
The issue for me is that what feminism has seemed to want to do is give women all of the advantages that men have historically enjoyed, but none of the disadvantages, and to maintain all of the historic privileges of women. So if you go back to the 1700s and Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England and Wales, you'll find that there is a provision in the criminal law at that time for domestic violence, to protect women from domestic violence.
One second, because I know the point you're going, and I dig it, but we have to keep the lights on from these evil capitalist sponsors.
Oh, dear.
So, Girl Writes What, Karen Strawn, we will be back after this break. If you leave, you're a patriarchist. We are back with Karen. Sorry, I cut you off, but I've heard you made this point because I've watched your long talks on YouTube, Pillar to Post, and you were talking about the criminal justice provisions for domestic abuse. The floor is yours.
So essentially, you know, as far back as Blackstone, probably earlier, you essentially had Blackstone. Not only did he include these provisions that protect women, that women have the security of the peace against their husbands. But he also went and dissed the men of previous generations at the same time. And this is sort of what I call one good man syndrome, right? So Blackstone is like this revolutionary man, right? Modern times, you know, in the more enlightened era of Charles II, he's saying those men back then were really horrible and violent with their wives, but we men now, we're better than that.
Right.
And so then you go fast forward to Theodore Roosevelt in 1906 in his State of the Union address, and he was proposing bringing back the corporal punishment, the whipping post.
The whipping post.
Specifically for men who beat their wives. And
Doesn't sound like that secret patriarchy meeting we've been hearing about.
No, it really doesn't. But at the same time, the response to women who beat their husbands, that was all dealt with by the community. It was an informal thing, and it was dealt with by the community.
And so the
men were shamed. The neighbors would gather around the house and bang pots and pans and call him like a pussy or whatever. Can I say that? I don't know.
You can call somebody a pussy. You can't actually refer to the anatomy, because I've heard someone call Barack Obama a pussy actually on this home station here in Detroit.
Okay.
But you can't say she had a glorious. So continue.
Okay. All right. But
these are the rules. When we go to the web extended version afterward, you can say whatever you want.
Yeah, no, that'll make me happy, because I get stressed out when I can't F-bomb all over the place.
My apologies.
But essentially, so you had that, or you had the riding the donkey backwards, where they'd strap him to a cart and they'd parade him around town, and people would throw stuff at him and jeer and call him all sorts of names.
The kind of stuff that when happened to a gay guy, I think Texas A&M was a national outrage. This is just another Tuesday night for the pansy on the block who got swatted by Lucy.
Yeah, in the 16 and 1700s and the 1800s. And you know, but one of the interesting things about it is, like, so feminists came along with their revolutionary idea that domestic hitting your wife is wrong. Nobody actually knew it. Society supported it and all of this stuff. And we all bought it because it actually, some men hit their wives. And because of that, you know, it's like, it's easy for us. We get so outraged by it. When you see that happening, and you can see it in these,
that's the big irony.
Experiments on the street where, you know, you have a man who's being rough with a woman and it's all staged. And there was one where he had three guys rush him and they shoved him down and he got all scabby on his arm and he had to yell, "We're filming, we're filming."
Was this in Central Park and the black guys grabbed him? Is that the one?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
because he was being rough with his girlfriend.
Right.
And at the same time they reversed it and she was like, she almost threw him through a plate glass window.
Right.
And like pushed him into it. And you could see the glass just like, and guys were laughing and they were like, walking by and like smacking him across the head, like joining in, helping her out, beating the guy. So we have this way of like, I don't understand how we can live under this collective delusion where we somehow think that there's a war on women and that gender violence against women is normalized and supported by society. And it's like a function of patriarchal masculinity. Patriarchal masculinity, we have an entire body of Western literature going back hundreds and hundreds of years that defines the hero of the story as the guy who is willing to avenge wrongs done against a woman. And the villain is instantly identified by his willingness to harm a woman or even be mean to her.
Right. Yeah, well, women or children, generally speaking, and that kind of goes back to the idea that, you know, it's one of those things, and I've talked about this. By the way, my wife has swatted me. We've talked about it here on air, and I'm okay with it. Can I say I deserved it? No. And she didn't beat me, but what? Why are you nodding your...
No, I've witnessed these 99% of the time. You probably deserve it.
Okay.
It's like Bill Burr, you know, he's like, you know, every time I get punched in the face, you know, there's some point where I'm driving home, you know, and I'm thinking back and, you know, I was kind of actually being a dick back there.
Right. Yeah. Not every beating just falls from the sky.
Yeah.
and I'm not trying to be a dick about it, you know, but,
quiet in here.
Yeah, exactly. No, my wife did it, and then what's funny is I totally juiced it for all it was worth. I was like, I can't believe you. If I did that, your father is here. The cops are here. I left to grab a drink and acted like I was upset, but really I was just thinking, just put that one on the ledger for Steven, because I'm walking out of this one a winner.
So
listen, that's just like, I'm okay. That's why I want to make clear. I'm not whining and saying, no, I'm fine with it. I'm fine that every now and then I get swatted because my wife thinks it's acceptable because I crossed the line and I don't get to do it with her. On the flip side, she puts up with a lot of stuff that I do that I would not put up with from wife. I would be like, what are you doing? These are stupid decisions. I do stupid stuff, Karen. I do very stupid things.
Agreed. But here's the thing that drives me crazy, because I think that domestic violence, there are several different types of domestic violence, right? So you've got the mutually combative couple.
It's never funny.
And
sometimes it's funny.
And then there's unilateral female violence against a male partner. And then there's unilateral male violence against a female partner. And that is actually the most rare form that there is. Female violence, sort of non-mutual violence, is twice as common, where the woman is sometimes extremely violent, and the man never hits back. She's trying to stab him, and he just grabs her wrists and never actually retaliates.
Right.
But you have these couples that are
well, that's why also, real quick, domestic violence is higher in lesbian households. People don't want to acknowledge that.
They don't. And but you have this sort of this big, huge swath of cases that are mutually violent. And most of those fall into something called common couple violence. So it's a push, or it's a shove, or it's a slap. And it's generally external triggers. You know, there's the mother-in-law's visiting, or, you know, they're going bankrupt or something like that. There's someone lost a job and they can't pay their bills. There's something there that's making life really stressful.
One second, because I want to continue this. Let's keep you on air for one more segment, and then we'll go to the web extended, because I want my audience to hear this. Gay Jared, find out the show clock, because I don't know exactly how much time we have. The next segment, Girl Writes What, back after this. We are back in the second hour. We don't usually do this. Usually we go straight to the web extended version, but I felt like it required some context because I just sort of let the bomb drop that my wife beats me. So, Karen, you were talking about the domestic abuse statistics and information, which I find incredibly interesting. Again, the floor is yours.
There is a difference between, I think, violence and abuse. And common couple violence sort of illustrates this. You have a couple that they're having a really hard time for whatever reason, and they are arguing. They're having conflict, and one of them will push the other, or slap, or whatever, right? And it's just out of frustration and stress. And typically, those cases, they're extremely minor incidents. They don't tend to repeat once the stress is alleviated. You know, you went in, you did your consumer proposal, and now you have a way out of those bills or whatever. You know, your mother-in-law goes away. Once that stressor is gone, the incidents don't repeat. It's just how humans are when they get really, really stressed out and they have conflict. Sometimes they will engage in mild violence. Those, I think, they need to be dealt with from a public health perspective rather than from a criminal perspective. Because if you have a situation where a wife slaps her husband and then he pushes her back or pushes her out of the way to leave the house, he's probably going to be the one arrested and charged, right?
Yeah.
So even if he's just defending himself, if she has any marks on her, even if she doesn't have marks on her, and he does, he's probably going to be the one arrested because of the model of domestic violence that we use in our legislation and policy, which is written by feminists, and it's all based on patriarchal norms and the subordination of women and male dominance and all kinds of other BS that doesn't actually make any sense.
Yeah, sorry, we're still on terrestrial. No, you're right. Well, let me go through really quickly, because I don't want to get too off in the weeds. As we go to the web extended version, we can spend as much time on those individual cases. So let me just kind of go rapid fire with you real quick for people who don't really know. So like a common myth, and I just want you to say true or untrue, and then we'll sort of circle back. Men make more for the exact same job as a woman.
Oh, that's total BS.
Okay. Men are more likely to perpetrate domestic violence.
No, women are.
That men tend to be the ones to commit sexual assault at a much higher rate toward women.
Not at a much higher rate. No. It's a gender symmetry.
Well, that's when I was leading, because I know if you take account actually the prison rapes, men are raped actually more frequently. If you look at
those are all perpetrated by men.
They are perpetrated by men, against men.
Yes, I don't like to categorize the rape that happens out in society. It's a completely different thing from what happens in prisons. In prisons, it's encouraged by staff.
Either way, somebody needs a salve. So let's go on to that men tend to think of women as unintelligent, subservient, or second-class citizens to men.
No. I can't see that.
Well, I'm just trying to go through the things where everyone talks about it. You know, right now we have this trend on Twitter where these are just things that people believe to be self-evident. I remember watching something with you and I can never say his name, Cenk Uygur, the Young Turks guy.
Cenk Uygur. Something.
He sounds like every single like Lebanese guy from Montreal who talks like this. What's wrong with you, Karen? We would have given you that one. You come in and you talk like this. You know what I'm talking about? Those guys like the Greeks and the Lebanese in Montreal. It's that sort of mix of the cadence and the French Canadian, and they put the cuss word at the end of their sentence. It makes me feel dirty. And he was really mad that you talked about women having the right to vote. So here's one that sort of I think is just a great it's a golden calf that you're not allowed to attack. Now, you talked about women who were polled in Europe when given the right to vote, and most of them didn't want it. Now, everyone goes, are you saying women didn't have the right to vote? No, you were making the point. Why did they not want the right to vote? That's important because things came along with which men were burdened that women were not burdened, and they thought the vote came with those burdens, correct? So I want you to clarify that.
They did. Actually, even in 1917, the Supreme Court of the U.S. Codified it in legal precedent that the draft was connected to citizenship rights. It was a required obligation on the part of citizens in return for the rights granted by government, which would include the right to vote. But as well as that, there was civil conscription, which included things like posses and bucket brigades if you were ordered by a fire marshal, a duty to assist the police if required, if ordered to. Going further back, there were things called hue and cry laws, which essentially male bystanders, adult male bystanders could be held criminally culpable for not intervening if someone was being assaulted and was or robbed or whatever and was raising a hue and cry.
That was the series finale of Seinfeld.
There you go. That used to be law. It used to be law, and now they're trying to bring it back. But so these were all duties of citizenship that men had, and women never. I mean, women didn't even get drafted to pick up litter from the sides of highways for during wartime or if there was need or whatever. They didn't have to do mandatory war work. Nothing. They got their vote for free.
Right.
And they maintained a lot of the female privileges that they would have, that they were afraid that they would lose, like a husband's responsibility to financially provide for them and immunity from repayment of their own debts and things like that. So.
Exactly. Well, that also is very tough for leftists to swallow because it flies in the face of, well, voting is just a birthright. Well, it was actually really considered a privilege, especially when you're considering a representative republic. And that's because, you have the Bernie Sanders syndrome now where parasites will eventually devour their hosts if they can just vote in their own self-interest and not have any of the responsibilities.
Yeah.
It's great to just say, yeah, I want to vote for that so you can pass the bill to this guy. And when there was a time where both women and men, and I think this is pivotal, this is just me interjecting, when both women and men felt responsible for themselves, women said, well, that's an additional responsibility that falls on me, not the taxpayer, not the men, and I don't know if I want it. And what was the number? Women, was it 70% were opposed to it?
It was a postcard poll, so I'm sure that they didn't have 100% response rate. Only the people who really cared about the issue would probably have gone and sent the postcards back to, it was John Stuart Mill who proposed it.
Okay.
You had 70% of the women who cared enough one way or the other saying, no, we don't want this. And 30% saying, yes, we want the vote. And so, and part of me is like, what, were these women stupid? Didn't they realize that they would get the vote for free, like without any obligation? Like, what have they been smoking that they don't realize that they're going to just get it handed to them?
Yeah.
So.
Well, pot didn't have as high THC content back then, so we can rule that out. Must have been something. Maybe they had some shrooms going on. Those
I don't know.
Back then.
I mean, they were teetotalers, so they probably weren't drinking. So
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, it's a good point, though. And again, to clarify, making sure that people listening aren't appalled and have their little hate tweets ready, no one here is saying women didn't deserve the right to vote. It's an interesting historical context as to why the women who were engaged in the political process did not want the right to vote.
Yeah, they
essentially
it was pretty much the same afternoon that the majority of women decided that they wanted it. that they were granted the right to vote. But, you know, what's the government supposed to do? It's 70% of women don't want this.
Yeah.
We're going to make them have it.
Right. Without drafting them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but they would never have drafted women. They would never have done that.
Well, we just had someone call in last week who was a sergeant in the Marines. And I don't know if you saw the study that just came out. All male squads when compared to gender integrated squads. So not even all male versus all female outperformed women on every single task. And there's a reason that actually – there's a reason men and women are segregated in prison. There's a reason men and women are segregated with, you know, the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF is – and this sergeant in the Marines who called in was very cute actually. People immediately wanted to – they're like, she has a sexy voice right here on this – shame on you, listeners. She's a nice woman. She said the big problem was that the men felt so responsible for the women. It was distracting. This whole myth of never leave a man behind. Well, it's BS. Sometimes you have to leave a man behind. But none of the men in a squad would leave a woman behind.
No, they won't. And it also – there's a thing that happens to men when men can operate very, very well in a group of only men. And they hash out their pecking order and they sort of deal with things – in that way, that in a reasonable fashion, and they get along. They force themselves to get along, and even if they don't like each other,
or they fight it out, and then it's over after the fight.
Yeah, no, and then everybody's got renewed respect for even the guy who got pummeled, right? You know, oh, well, you stood up for yourself. You know, good on you, kid. You introduce a woman into that type of environment, especially a high stress environment where it's absolutely mandatory that people work together efficiently and cohesively. And you get a completely different dynamic between the men.
Yeah. And it changes it entirely. And, you know, that's one thing, too, with the whole the transgender and the don't ask, don't tell. And now we have to all tell. The military was a microcosm that was entirely free of politics or sort of cultural, movements at one point, because you were supposed to be a number. That's why you shaved your head. That's why you came in. You were a number because that was the job. And, that's changing now, and having performed for the troops quite a bit, they talk about that. We have to go, and then we'll go to the web extended version, louderwithcrowder.com. You'll see this on YouTube. Girl Writes What, Karen Strawn. Thank you, and stay on Louder with Crowder. I know you think this video is done, but if you click this box, you can actually go over to Karen's channel, Girl Writes What, where there is an extra hour of extended, uncensored interview where we talk about all things, not just feminism. And she's smarter than me.